You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
It was the year of fire.
The year of destruction.
The year we took back what was ours.
It was the year of rebirth.
The year of great sadness.
The year of pain.
And a year of joy.
It was a new age.
It was the end of history.
It was a year everything changed.
The year is 2261. The place, Babylon 5.
Who am I? I am Susan Ivanova, Commander. Daughter of Andrei and Sophie Ivanov. I am the right hand of vengeance. And the boot that is gonna kick your sorry ass all the way back to Earth. I am death incarnate. And the last living thing that you are ever going to see.
It's over because we've decided it's over. Now get the hell out of our galaxy.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic Babylon 5. This week, Season 4, Episode 18, Intersections in Real Time. I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis. Sheridan has been captured and is now being tortured. That's it. Written by JMS and directed by John Laffier, this episode was released on the 16th of June, 1997, and takes place on October the 23rd, 2261. And its guest stars, Ray Burke as William, Wayne Alexander as Adrazi, Bruce Gray as the interrogator, and Peter Brown as minister. So, guys, what did we think of this bizarre episode?
I don't know. it's pretty much just John strapped to a chair or laying on the ground for the most time while this smug interrogator says words and plays with his glasses. So I don't know. I liked that we had Wayne Alexander because, of course, he played Lorianne. Now he plays Adrazi here. But I don't know. Was any of the main cast in this episode even at the beginning? I don't recall. It was just John, right?
Yeah, that's right. They bring this up in the trivia. Yeah, it's just him.
Yeah, so that's not how an episode should go, you know? Like on the Delta Flyers podcast, Tom Paris there, he's always talking about the better episodes are one where all the cast are involved. So if they don't, it has a lower rating. So I don't know if you've listened to Delta Flyers, but they've just finished their 7th season review of Voyager, and they're going to start doing Deep Space Nine with Terry Farrell and Armin Shimerman. Wow, once they're allowed to, once the strikes are over.
Yeah.
Nice.
So anyway, it just has John and a bunch of guest stars. So it's kind of a weird episode. I don't know what to think. I'm looking forward to our discussion.
Yeah. Dan, what do you think?
See, I think I'm going the opposite way. Normally, I would agree. I like when it's an ensemble cast that everybody has something to do. It all makes sense. But I quite enjoy when a series that has already gone through a number of seasons does something different, and it really felt different. It felt like it could have been made like just a couple of years ago. It felt like that they've taken out one character and they've just made a really weird, different tone of episode. It's depressing. It's not exactly a fun time, 45 minutes on Babylon 5. Let's go and fight the Nazis on Earth. No, let's just torture our hero for 45 minutes. But it felt like I was watching a play. It felt like I had gone a little off West End theater. Not everyone goes there, and they just had a two-hander between two solid actors. There are a couple of, you know, side roles that come in just to sort of fill out the thing, but I felt like I was back in A-level sort of studying the theater, the way that they were reacting to each other, that it was glances here, and then it was a bit of wording from the interrogator, and then that changes the demeanor that Bruce Boxleitner brought to Sheridan. I really enjoyed it. I was really engaged with this one. Coming back and doing the second watch, I was actually looking forward to this one a lot more than the previous week, just because it was so weird. It was so unexpected. So even though normally I would like to see all of my characters, because we hadn't seen anything like this before in Babylon 5, I think it went up in my estimation. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I could see that, because it does keep your attention riveted to the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I think interrogation scenes always make me... it's really emotional, because it's, you're rooting for the guy so much. You don't want him to break. You want him to say something, against what he's telling you, and just to play with him. And this is exactly what Sheridan does. He doesn't break until maybe right at the very end of the episode. But we'll see. It's the thing about this episode is it's not about Sheridan. It's about the interrogator, because he's doing all the talking. John's just sat there strapped in a chair, and the other guy's messing with him and eating the sandwiches and polishing the glasses and all this type of thing. So you have to have a really good, strong character, strong actor to go against that. Especially, and saying about ensemble casts and things, I like it when you've got an ensemble cast, and every now and again you might focus on one, because they tend to do this in early seasons. You'll focus on one character, for each episode until you've got everybody, and then you've got them, you've got the backstory, you know who they are, etc., etc. What I don't like is when the show progresses, they seem to fixate on a character who is generally in the lead position. So in Next Generation, Picard becomes the man, and it's all about him. And suddenly the ensemble doesn't become an ensemble anymore. They're just background characters, and it's all about the man. Oh, wait a minute. Brent Spiner's doing a really great Data here. Let's bring him along as well, and you build these two guys up. And yet the others are getting forgotten about, to a point where even some of them leave, because of it, and come back, all this type of thing. Then we get to Babylon 5, and we got the same thing. Now, I felt as though the first season with Michael O'Hare, it wasn't him and the rest. It was an ensemble piece. And we saw more of Shakar and Londo and Ivanova and all, Garibaldi. All of these characters were playing the parts. Then suddenly, unfortunately, the dynamic changes, and we get Bruce Boxleitner in, who is fabulous. But he's so good that they've brought him forward, and they bring along Delenn as well, because she's fabulous, and let's get them together. And suddenly, as I've been saying, it's the Sheridan and Delenn show, like it was the Picard and Data show. So, and especially the films. So when it comes to this point, where we're now just focusing purely on one actor, and you've totally got rid of all the others, I think it's wrong. It's an ensemble show, and should always be. If you want to focus on one character, and then do another one later, and do another, so they all have a piece, and that's fine. I just get annoyed when they focus on one who becomes a big star because of it, and the others are just washed away. Where the hell's Shakar been over the last few episodes? Where's Malari, who's been in a couple, but not as many? Veer's disappeared. He's popped up once. Where's Lanier? Where's all these other characters that are integral to the show and the plot? So I think this is the beginning of the Sheridan and Delenn show, which has been bubbling away anyway. Having said that, this is, it's only when I watched this episode that I remembered it. I thought, I do remember this one. And I couldn't remember why. I couldn't remember what it was about and what the dynamic was until the very end. And I went, oh God, yes, that's right. Now I get it. Yeah, it's, and it's the classic way of trying to break somebody by being their friend, offering them a drink, have a sandwich, and then, I'm really evil. And then they go back again. But really, you need to give me all the information so we can let you go. We'll let your father go at the same time. Don't worry, we're really good guys. Or rather, as he was saying, it's not me, it's my bosses. You know what they're like. I can't, in other words, it's the typical manager, where he says, well, I'd love to let you go early today because, your mum's in hospital. But you know what the bosses are like. They don't allow it, an hour early, and they start moaning. I can't let you go. So, like I say, it's up to me. I'd do it. But, no, it's not. It's you, you pillock. You're the one that's stopping it. This is what this guy's doing. He's the bad guy. He's the one that's trying to get everything out of you. So But anyway, let's start the review of this scene, because it is just one basic scene. Sheridan is lying on the floor of a prison cell, going over the memories of Garibaldi's treachery and Ivanova's warning about Garibaldi. A table and chair are brought in, along with an interrogator.
Do you have any allergies or illnesses I should be aware of? Are you currently taking any medication? Have you had any trouble with your heart? When I ask a question, you will respond at once. You will not hesitate, you will not consider, you will not lie. Cooperation will be rewarded. Resistance
is futile. Sheridan has been fitted with painkillers.
We bought them from the Narn during the war. They're most effective. If you come within 3 feet of me, you will be hurt. If you come within 2 feet, you will be rendered unconscious. You know, there's nothing to be gained by trying to harm me. I am not the enemy. To be the enemy, I must have some personal stake in what happens to you. I'm not interested in that at all. I'm here to do a job, nothing more. You are a name, a file, and a case number. That is all.
The level of discomfort is up to him. He will use whatever level of pain is necessary, but that is up to Sheridan. He is strapped to the chair and asked again, does he understand? Sheridan nods. And so they can begin. Sheridan is still trapped to the chair with light shining in his face when the interrogator comes back into the room. He switches off the lights and folds them away and wishes him good morning. Sheridan thinks it's still nighttime.
Good morning.
It's not morning.
It isn't?
No.
And how do you know that?
When you came in before, I saw daylight through the door. When you came in now, it's dark outside.
Daylight? You mean that?
But it's just a trick of the light, as the interrogator shows him.
Well, if that's daylight and that's night, then we may as well assume that this is morning again.
I mean, this is just like very reminiscent of any other Nazi interrogation or anything that is based on Nazi interrogation. For example, like, is it Chain of Command? What's the one?
With Picard and Gomez.
Four lights. That's
right. Four lights and all that. Yeah, it's exactly the same sort of waterboarding techniques they use for that. The interrogator takes his time getting ready. Forgetting his glasses, going out to get them, coming back and writing things down in his book, looking at his watch. And then he unwraps his sandwiches and starts to eat. He looks through some files and sees that Sheridan has no interest in politics.
You know, this is interesting. I hadn't seen this before. During your time at the Academy and all your years during the war, afterward, you never showed any particular interest in politics. So you don't consider yourself to be political?
No.
That's interesting. Yes. That's very interesting. You see, that's what they thought. That's why you're here.
And asks him if he is political, to which he says no. Is he trying to overthrow Earth through outside influence? Sheridan says no.
If you never showed any particular interest in politics, then it's not likely that you'd start running around trying to overthrow your own government. Unless you had been under the influence of outsiders. Is that a fair thing to say? That you've been under the influence of other people?
No.
No, really? I find that most remarkable. I mean, aren't we all under the influence of others?
He tries to convince Sheridan that it is lunchtime by eating a corned beef sandwich.
This is really excellent corned beef. Mm. You have to get just the right mustard. The brown with the seeds, not the yellow kind. And not too much of it. If there's too much, it irritates the corners of my mouth. Mm. Oh, would you like some? I know they haven't fed you since you got here. That's at least 2 days.
Sheridan agrees that it is lunchtime and is rewarded by half of the sandwich.
Isn't it lunchtime?
You just said it was morning.
Well, you can't have a corned beef sandwich for breakfast. It would upset your stomach. Corned beef sandwiches are for lunch.
If it's morning, you can't have it. If it's lunchtime, you can. Is it lunchtime?
I'm sure it's lunchtime somewhere.
It is the interrogator's job to make him believe whatever time of the day it is.
It does prove, though, how everything is a matter of perspective. You see what you think is daylight, and you assume it's morning. Take it away. You think it's night. Offer you a sandwich. If it's convenient, you'll think it's midday. The truth is fluid. The truth is subjective. Out there, it doesn't matter what time it is. In here, it's lunchtime, if you and I decide that it is.
And the truth is sometimes what you believe it is to be, and sometimes what you decide it is to be.
My task is to make you decide to believe differently. And when that happens, the world will remake itself before your very eyes.
Not a chance.
No. You've done it before.
Sheridan doesn't believe him, but the interrogator tells him he's done it before.
When?
When haven't you? When you were a soldier, you fought the Minbari. The Minbari were the enemy. That was the truth. And then one day someone said the Minbari are no longer the enemy. And that was the truth. And you not only accepted them as allies, you embraced them. You took one of them as a lover.
It's not the way.
You swore an oath to Earth Force because you believed in it. That was the truth. Now Earth Force is supposed to be the enemy. Now that is the truth.
A soldier accepts the face of truth changes on a daily basis.
It all depends on what you believe and what other people tell you to believe. The truth is fluid. The truth is subjective.
No!
Governments make policy. Soldiers have to accept those policies even when they're completely contradictory. It's the very definition of your job. A soldier accepts that the face of truth changes on a daily basis.
Sheridan finishes off the sandwich and says,
Thanks for the sandwich. You're right. The corned beef is perfect. The mustard's a little weak for my tastes.
The interrogator tells Sheridan that the contents of the sandwich include a toxin that, when ingested in small parts every day, as he has done, they would not have any effect, but a large quantity would take effect in a couple of minutes, and he leaves the room. When the interrogator returns, Sheridan is on the floor and greets him with
"Good morning,"
and asks how he is feeling. Sheridan is looking rough. Apparently, he's thrown up most of his food that he has eaten over the last 4 days. The interrogator offers him a very small glass of water with an Alka-Seltzer. Sheridan won't drink it, so he leaves it on the floor next to him. Sheridan takes the drink. He starts to feel better and sits back in the chair. The interrogator then locks his legs to the chair and tells him that his father sends his regards.
And by the way, I should mention your father sends his regards. He's being held at another facility a few miles from here. And one of my associates is handling his case. When I stopped by to pick up your report, I passed him in the hall.
Then he's still alive.
Alive and well.
But Sheridan is suspicious and asks him why he is telling him this.
Why are you telling me this?
Why not? I told you I have no vested interest in helping you or harming you as long as the job gets done. He made a request. It didn't go against my orders, so I passed it along. Thank you would be the appropriate response.
Thank you.
He says they will keep his father locked up and will only let him go when Sheridan is let go. The interrogator then shows Sheridan his confession and reads out some of the charges that he is going to admit to.
This is your confession. It goes on at some length, so allow me to summarize. You plead guilty to charges of treason, mutiny, conspiracy to commit mutiny, sedition, terrorism.
That's a lie.
Conspiracy to overthrow the government, illegal seizure of Earth property, assault on fellow officers, sabotage.
Now, just a minute.
Willful destruction of public property, disobeying direct orders of superior officers, and the murder of 547 officers and crew on board the EAS Roanoke.
I won't sign it. You will sign it.
We're not even halfway through the show. He will be shown on live on state TV, signing the confession so that everybody will know it's him and it has not been forged or recreated.
You will sign it and you will read it aloud in full view of the public so they'll know that we haven't forged your image or your signature. You will name your accomplices. You will apologize to the families and friends of those who died fighting you. And in the end, you will beg for mercy on the grounds that you're under the influence of aliens who are trying to subvert the government and undermine the authority of the president.
He will not be allowed to leave until he has signed the confession and the interrogator leaves the room.
I demand to see an attorney. I demand the presence of a full military tribunal. You have no right.
No, you have no rights. There's no courtroom here, Captain. No tribunals, no attorneys, no justice, no mercy, no fairness, no hope, no last-minute escape. You will walk through that door when you confess, and not 1 second before.
The interrogator comes back into the room and says,
"Morning."
He goes out and comes back in with two guards who are dragging a Drazi and put him in the interrogator's seat. And he sets up a recording device. The Drazi confesses to taking part in a conspiracy to overturn Earth Force government. The interrogator says that once he has confessed, he will be let go. He names all of the Babylon 5 co-conspirators, including a senator who has nothing to do with it. But as the interrogator says, he's become an annoyance. And why waste the opportunity? Sheridan tries to convince the Drazi not to carry on with the confession, and he is convinced by Sheridan's argument, and he says he will not cooperate any further as he has nothing more to say. The Drazi is then laid on the stretcher and taken out of the room and into room 17. The interrogator carries on the interview, but Sheridan wants to know what is going to happen to the Drazi. The interrogator says he was expendable from the minute he arrived. In fact, they are all expendable, just cogs in the machine. Just then, the lights dim and there is screaming as the Drazi sounds like he has been killed. The interrogator turns on a recording. It goes on and on a loop. And then the interrogator leaves the room.
You will cooperate with the state for the good of the state and your own survival. You will confess to the crimes of which you have been accused. You will be released and returned to society a productive citizen if you cooperate. Resistance will be punished. Cooperation will be rewarded.
Good night. I'll see you in the morning.
You will cooperate with the state for the good of the state and your own survival. You will confess to the crimes of which you have been accused. You will be released and returned to society a productive citizen if you cooperate.
Can you imagine having to listen to that?
I can mm-hmm. blank things out like that. I prefer noise.
Yeah, but it was just a little bit louder than would be comfortable.
You'd be surprised. So today, which has been a sort of fairly typical day, we have an open office and I sit right next to and right opposite a few people. And the office is can be quite a noisy place anyway. And I'm getting distracted by people's conversations here, left, right, and center. So I put music on really loudly into my ears, so I drown out all the other sound. And in fact, I don't even hear the music after a while. I'm that focused on what I'm doing. And, so I can, you know, I need that. And the other thing is, because I suffer from tinnitus, it's actually louder if I take my headphones off because all I can hear is it's really high-pitched screaming. But I have to have something in my ears that drowns out that as well. So interrogation, piece of piss.
Yeah, that recorded message would be fine. Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, if it was Christmas music, then maybe.
Oh, that'd be worse.
Yeah. Okay, I'll admit that one. Yeah.
Yeah, if he was playing Mariah Carey, I would have broken like that. No resistance whatsoever. Yeah, I'll tell you whatever you need to.
Or any Disney musical, you know, Let It Go, Let It Go. When he comes back into the room, he says,
"Good morning,"
and takes away Sheridan's nutritional drip.
That piece of paper and a few words from you are all that's standing between you and that door. Don't you see how foolish this is? I'm not keeping you here. They're not keeping you here. You're keeping you here. And are you suicidal or simply self-destructive, preferring to let us do the work for you?
He asks again for him to sign the confession, saying that it all that stands between him and leaving.
Don't you want to leave? Don't you want to be free? Walk through that door. Feel the sun on your face again.
Yes.
Then sign it and speak. That's all. Then you can go. They don't want you dead. They want you as a symbol, not a martyr, as a warning to others.
Sheridan says, sorry, he says it has to be an honest, believable, and sincere confession, otherwise, when scanned by telepaths, they will find out it's not real. As the interrogator speaks, Sheridan sees a vision of Delenn behind the interrogator. It gives him the strength to spit on the confession and says, no, he won't sign it.
I really wish you hadn't done that, Captain. I really, sincerely wish you hadn't done that. I have no control over what will happen next. It's out of my hands.
The interrogator comes back into the room and tells him to focus on him.
Right. Now listen to me. Wake up. There's something you have to understand. Focus. Focus on me. Do you know why they're doing this to you? Because you're a war hero, one of the few to come out of the Minbari War. They've invested a considerable amount of time and effort making you a hero in the public's eye. The problem is, when a war hero starts believing certain things and saying certain things, the public listens.
His credibility has become a liability to their credibility.
They figure maybe there's something to it. Your credibility has become a threat to their credibility. So one of them has to go. The best way out for everyone is for you to confess and lay the blame for what's happened at the feet of the alien government. Whether it's true or not, it doesn't matter. Truth is immaterial. They can sell it, and they will let you live. Note, I said it is the best way. I did not say it was the only way.
They can create a false image, a false confession.
The other way, Captain, is a posthumous confession. Your signature is not a problem. They have your image on file. They can create you reading the confession.
Which is funny because he said he couldn't do it before. Mm. He says he wanted to put him on live TV so they could see it was a real thing and it wasn't recreated. And now they're saying they can recreate it.
Now that's not as good as having you out there where people can see you so they know it's true, that even you can be broken. You cannot resist. With a video record, there will always be doubt. It's not the same as breaking you. But I'm told that as of this morning, it is an acceptable option.
It's funny, I was thinking about what you said. The preeminent truth of our age is that you cannot fight the system. But if, as you say, the truth is fluid, that the truth is subjective, then maybe you can fight the system. As long as just one person refuses to be broken, refuses to bow down.
But can you win?
Every time I say no.
He gets taken out on the stretcher and is told to be taken to room 17.
Captain John Sheridan, will you or will you not sign a confession and endorse it before a public hearing?
No.
He's given the last rites as he is wheeled through the facility, and he sees another vision of Delenn. They enter room 17, where there is a hooded figure in a cloak waiting for him. The figure leaves, and he's left in the room on his own. Then four guards come in, three undo the straps, and put him down into the chair. His arms are locked in position, and they leave. As the door shuts, a new interrogator comes in and says,
good morning.
The hooded figure takes off his hood and reveals it was the Drazi that was confessing in front of him only a few days before. The new interrogator starts to ask all the same questions all over again as the interrogation restarts.
Now, before we begin your interrogation, I'll need some information. Do you have any allergies or illnesses that I should know about? Are you currently taking any medication? Have any trouble with your heart? You will answer my questions when they are asked. Resistance will be punished. Cooperation will be rewarded. Do you have any illnesses or allergies that I should know about? Currently taking any medication? You have any trouble with your heart?
Well, that was something. Now, before we get into the discussion, we should probably play a promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
Tune in to the Con Guys Show. Con, as in Comic-Con. We are Hollywood filmmakers and super fans who cover all the news of the con universe, including the films, the TV shows, the streaming series, the experiences, and the events that fuel your fandom. If you'd find it at Comic-Con, then you'll find it here. Now in our seventh year, the Con Guys Show is a proud member of the ESO Network.
Okay, so do we think the Drazi was a figment of his imagination, or was he really there?
Oh, I think he was really there. I think he was a Drazi accomplice to the interrogators.
Mm. Okay. Because the smile between them was a little bit weird. And then the one thing I liked is how the stretcher became the interrogation table. That was a neat trick.
Yeah, so it was clever. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the point where I thought I was watching a play, because they're just reusing bits of set to make it doing yes. something else. Yeah.
Yeah, talk about a bottle show. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. One room, a table that doubles up as a trolley, a chair. That's it.
It could totally be a play.
I mean, they nearly blew all of the. In fact, it could be a spin-off play, couldn't it? They nearly blew all of the budget on the glass of water and a ham sandwich, a corned beef sandwich, paying for extra for mustard. Yeah. Okay. On to the trivia. In JMS's original plan, this was to be the season 4 finale, saving the meat of the Earth Civil War for season 5. Mm. The plan had to be substantially altered when it seemed the show would be cancelled after season 4. There you go. Mm. This is the only episode of the series in which the actual space station does not appear. Mm. This episode only features two regular cast members, the fewest of any episode of the series, Bruce Boxleitner, obviously John Sheridan, and Mira Furlan, Delenn. Other cast members are seen in the opening flashback setups, and Furlan appears in two brief scenes with no dialogue. The scenario in this episode contains strong echoes of the interrogation scenes in George Orwell's 1984. This episode is the 84th episode of the series.
There you go.
That is trivial.
Yes.
Sheridan is told he has had pain givers installed, in which would cause an increasingly severe shock to the closer he got to the interrogator, beginning from a couple of feet away. Yet several times the interrogator comes within less than a foot, with no effect. Evidently, that's how the pain givers work. The victim cannot approach the interrogator, but the interrogator can approach the victim without setting off the givers. Such function can be easily implemented, even at the current level of technology. Or the interrogator simply lied.
Hmm. I thought he said they were being monitored. I just figured there was someone with a switch that if he looks like he's being aggressive towards the interrogator, they press it. When it's the other way around, not so much.
Yeah, he said, it sort of says halfway through the episode that they are occasionally monitored.
Mm.
So they you
know, again,
they,
could that, be a lie.
That, yeah, exactly. Yes. I mean, who knows what he's talking about? Yeah. Sean, are there any Star Trek connections?
As a matter of fact, there are. We had Ray Burke, who played William. He was in Star Trek The Next Generation episode Haven as Ren, and he also played a Sona doctor in Star Trek Insurrection, the ninth movie of the franchise. And then we had the interrogator, played by Bruce Gray. He was in the Enterprise episode Awakening as Sirach, and he was actually Admiral Chakotay in The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. In Next Generation, it was the episode Gambit Part 1, and in Deep Space Nine, it was the episode The Circle.
Yes, yeah. I sort of recognized him as Sorak, but I couldn't remember him. It's been a while since I've seen DS9, so yeah, I'd have to go back and see that one. But yes, there you go. Okay, moving on to our ratings. We rate our episodes out of jump gates, out of 5 jump gates, because of Babylon 5, and IMDb rate theirs out of 10, and they've given it an 8.4, which is like 4.2 to us, I suppose. Sean, what did you think of this episode?
You know what? Like I said at the beginning, I wasn't quite sure, but the more we discussed it, the deeper I realized it was. And it was like a play, and it was a total departure from what we're used to. Just the way they handled everything, it was pretty spectacular. I'm going to give it 4.5.
Okay. And Dan?
Yeah. If it was based on purely on Bruce Boxleitner's interaction with the interrogator, if it was just a performance analysis, I would have gone 5 out of 5. I really enjoyed coming back to sort of see it, even though it's a horrible, horrible scene to be coming back to, and you seeing your favorite hero being interrogated, it's tough to watch. However, as we've been discussing, you know, it is missing Jakar, you know, it is missing Londo, it is missing all these characters that we kind of need to know where they are. It's interesting you brought up Chain of Command, because even in Chain of Command, even though the majority of the scenes go back to Picard and his interrogation and the four lights and everything, we do still see the adventures of the Enterprise, and we're kind of given the context and the background. It would have been nice to have at least one cutaway just to see Ivanova is still leading the charge and that she is fighting for him, almost to give us, the audience, the hope that maybe he is going to be rescued, because this is very much a downer episode. If this had been the finale, it would have been a really weird way to end a season, just have our hero completely beaten down. And I'm not entirely sure everyone would probably come back. You know, do they really want to get depressed and have their heroes completely lose? So I think it was missing something. I just don't know what it was specifically. So I'm still going to go pretty high, though. I think I'm going to go 4.8 on this one.
I think this is a great episode. I think it could have quite easily have worked maybe a bit better to make it a 5 out of 5 by, like you say, making it maybe a half hour interrogation and 15 minutes of other people. Or maybe even more, I don't know. But it seemed to fly by, because a lot of it is not Bruce Boxleitner, it's the interrogator. He's doing all the talking, he's doing all of the acting of eating the sandwich and of fiddling with the glasses and going out, coming back in again. He really does lead this episode. I mean, if he had not been as good as he was, it could have been really hard to watch, because, you know, the acting wasn't as good and it didn't have the right emotion or whatever. It just wouldn't have been believable. He is the best type of nasty bad guy, because most of the time he's making you think that he is really being good, and, you know, and quite clearly he's not. And then even though he gives Sheridan the sandwich, and you know, I love the way he says, "Oh yeah, the brown mustard, you know, with the seeds, I like that." And then Sheridan comes back and says, "Oh no, the mustard's not strong enough for me. You know, it needs to be stronger." I thought that was brilliant. You know, nice little sort of smack in the face there. You know, after thinking about, you know, answering a question for a while, then comes back with that. But right at the end of the episode, where they bring in the new guy and the Drowsy is revealed. And then the new guy starts asking the same questions, and you see Sheridan's face, and it just drops, because he realizes that he's got nowhere, and this is going to start all over again. That's quite a reveal, if you like. That's it was quite a thing. So yeah, I do like this episode a lot. Sean, I forgot to say, in fact, both you and Dan have given this high enough ratings to get it into your top 10 of all. I must have given a few more episodes a little bit of a higher rating, because I've gone the same as Sean. I've given this a 4.5, because I thought it was, you know, really good. But obviously it doesn't make it into my top 10, so there must have been some better ones than this knocking around. I'm a bit surprised. I'm a bit tempted to up it and see if I can get it into the top 10, because I think it's actually quite... No,
you feel it's too high.
I'm going to keep it as a 4.5. Because even if I give it a 4.75 and something comes along that's even better later on and knocks it back out, so it wouldn't make any sense to try and get it into the top 10 and then have it knocked out, when I might as well just stick with the convictions and keep the 4.5.
Excellent.
So it's basically our average is a 4.6 for this episode, and that is put it into our top 10, our joint top 10, if you like.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that is the end of this episode. Join us again next week when we will be discussing Season 4, Episode 19, Between Darkness and the Light. Sounds like a Dylan episode to me. If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
Now, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
You'll answer my questions when they are asked. Resistance will be punished. Cooperation will be rewarded. Do you have any allergies or illnesses that I should know about? Are you currently taking any medication? Have you had any trouble with your heart? You will answer my questions when they are asked. Resistance will be punished. Cooperation will be rewarded.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.